Good afternoon, and thank you for joining Bamboo Solutions for this special Only at SPC session. I'm Julie Auletta, Director of the Solutions Center at Bamboo, and we're excited to have some good friends of ours joining us for this roundtable discussion on thought leadership, SharePoint 2013, and beyond. Before I introduce our guests, though, I'd like to take just a minute to mention the SharePoint Leadership Forum, or SPLF for short. Is anyone here familiar with SPLF? Nope. Well, let me tell you a little bit about it, for those of you unfamiliar. In an effort to better serve as a thought leader within the SharePoint community, we launched a SharePoint Leadership Forum a couple of years ago with an event in Washington, D.C. The task we set for ourselves was to assemble a group of compelling speakers who were recognized around the globe as SharePoint thought leaders in key business areas, and to create a forum for discussion between those experts and our attendees at the free event. That first SPLF was very well received by both attendees and speakers. So last year, we expanded it into a three-city tour, two in the US and an international event in Germany. We're currently finalizing plans for this year's SharePoint Leadership Forum events to take place this fall in Washington, D.C., Chicago, and London. As always, SPLF will be free to attend, and our guests here today are indicative of the peerless level of SharePoint experts you can expect to see on the speaker list. We'll be happy to discuss SPLF further after the session, but now, without further ado, let's meet today's guest speakers and get our discussions underway. First, during his years at Microsoft, he was literally the world's first SharePoint administrator, a man whose very name is synonymous with the SharePoint community. Most of you are probably already friends with him on Facebook, and the rest probably will be by this time tomorrow. He's Joel Olesen, otherwise known as SharePoint Joel. Our next guest is a premier field engineer for Microsoft, which is to say that it's his boots that are first on the ground to troubleshoot SharePoint issues and to kick off proactive engagements with Microsoft's enterprise customers. Please welcome a SharePoint Leadership Forum alum, Microsoft's Eric Harlan. Our final guest joins us from H3 Solutions, developers of Mobile Entree for SharePoint. He's co-founder and chief technologist at H3, and he's here today to offer expert insight from the front lines of the mobile revolution. Please join me in welcoming Mick Harris. So what we'd like to do in our panel today is offer questions from the audience of what you'd like to hear about from these guys. There are microphones in the audience, or I think if you speak up, we can repeat your questions. I thought I'd start off the questioning along that thought leadership line. Some of our guests are pretty well connected in the SharePoint community, starting SharePoint groups or working with SharePoint Saturdays. So I was wondering if you guys can, one of you might want to talk about how, what's the easiest way? How would I start a new SharePoint user group if I wanted to, if there wasn't one in my area?
You want to take this one or me?
Go for it.
All right. So I actually helped sort of drive the SharePoint Saturday initiative, but I started a SharePoint user group back in Baltimore before I moved to Dallas. There's not really a set way. Does anyone here already attend regularly a SharePoint user group?
Wow.
Anyone Sam. Know of a SharePoint user group in their area? Alright, so that means everyone else, there's a void there. And maybe you're the one who's going to be creating that SharePoint user group next, right? So there's not really a set way. I mean, it really depends on what the culture is going to be like. That area, it depends on what you hope to get out of the community that sort of assembles there as well. But ultimately, the core sort of walkaway functionality that we stick to is SharePoint possible. Start collecting the amount of speakers that you want as soon as possible. There's a couple different ways to get sidetracked if you want to talk about NSPC and find some speakers and get connected to things like that. But there's a lot of having an insight on that.
I've been involved at various SharePoint Saturdays and building user groups around the world. And what I've found is it starts with a spark. Somebody who's interested in gathering with other people in their community. And it doesn't have to be somebody who's done something like this before. There's technology to help support you, things like eventbrite.com, even meetup.com. Many user groups just simply start with these platforms to simply gather interests for other people. Once you've got a list, you can then communicate dates and so on. Let me just give you one story. I like telling stories. I was in Kenya a couple years ago, and this really even started before the Kenya event happened. Essentially, this started with one of the people in the community, who had some friends in Kenya that he wanted to connect with, and he had a real desire to connect with the community there. And at the time, you could either say it was a very distributed community, or you could say the community was non-existent. I would say that it's kind of distributed. It just wasn't off the ground. It was kind of parts and pieces that really needed to come together. So it started with we decided, hey, let's run a SharePoint Saturday in Kenya. And a lot of people would say, you're doomed to failure. Come on, something in the middle of Africa is going to have enough SharePoint people? That's ridiculous. And really, in this certain scenario, it started with a list. Who on LinkedIn has SharePoint in their profile? Let's reach out to those people. Those people then can tell their friends and their colleagues. It grows organically like that. When we showed up in Kenya, there were over 50, 60 people that actually came. And I was kind of dumbfounded. I would have been happy with 10. I would have been happy with 5. I would have been happy with 2. I'd be happy with 1, actually. Because having a group like that, I thought, wow, this is very powerful. But even in the back of my mind, I was thinking, these probably are just students. They're probably not really SharePoint people. And the more I got to know these people, I found they've been doing SharePoint 1-2 years. They're just barely fresh on it, and they're soaking it up. Every session we're doing, we're getting real SharePoint questions, and found that this community really was a real thing. Here we are in Africa. Wow, real thing. We had a special session on community at that event. And we started asking, we were trying to find, who's that spark? Who's that person in this community of the 50, 60 people that are there? Was launched by the local guys. There's more to that story, but I just want you to know that that's for real, and I've seen that story repeated over and over and over again. I'm kicking off the one in Jamaica later on this month. A lot of people were like, Jamaica, you just want to go to the islands. It's like, well,
you do just kind of want to go to the islands.
There's some truth to that, but
we have a customer.
I actually ran the Bermuda one. Loved speaking there. We had 40 people who showed up at that event. Jamaica, we've already got 40 people signed up. People said, it's not going to happen. It's happening. March 29th.
So that could be your area, your community that you haven't quite started yet. All right. Did you have something to add, Eric, or go?
Joel.
Okay. Nice. So any questions from the audience yet, or should I have several I can ask. But I'll let you guys have an opportunity. No? All right, well, you know, one of the things I was thinking of, here we are at a SharePoint show talking about SharePoint 2013, so I wanted to ask these guys, what do you think about the SharePoint app model? Good, bad, indifferent? I know as a Bamboo employee, it's very different for us. But what do you guys think? Nick?
Great. So one of the things that wasn't in my bio, I actually run a team of about 15 at a major government organization in D.C. So I've been knee-deep in basically SharePoint app development for a customer on-site for about 8 years now. I've seen the transition from 2007 to 2010, actually from 2003. So the WSP architecture comes out. All of a sudden, we're able to package our customization, and deployment becomes a lot more controlled. We start fitting in with the rest of the guys that are doing deployments on other stacks. Right now, it's still actually a pretty powerful story. But one of the things I'm really excited for, and I haven't even gotten to the cloud side of it yet, the app model from an on-premise standpoint is very, very exciting. We have right now our group inside. We use things like SharePoint Designer and InfoPath, and we call them no-code solutions. They're really, really cool. They're really popular. And from an enterprise standpoint, people love to show them off. But then when someone says, well, how can I get that? It becomes almost a full process of rebuilding that thing. Because we're not actually deploying something. We're not creating outages. It's very fast, quick turnaround. The new app model, starting with SharePoint hosted apps, now I can basically package up this customization in something that's easily distributable across the enterprise without outages. People can install these things, start using them almost immediately. We can provide updates to them that are opt-in. It's really, really exciting stuff. On the other end of the spectrum, it's what are called provider-hosted apps. Basically, I can host a web page on an Apache server or on IIS and integrate that into SharePoint. Someone's installing that app where this functionality is actually running on a different set of servers, so I'm not bearing down my web front ends. That's the simple version. The more complex version, which is really exciting, is, especially in my case, I work for an organization that has a long, long history of Sybase, Oracle, Java apps that are on lots of hardware, very expensive, they're on multi-year turnaround before they get updates, these kinds of things. I'm about to talk to them about how they can essentially allow their customers to install apps in their SharePoint 2013 environment that integrate with these systems. So they can throw in a web part from this massive system that's been around for decades, and it ceases to be this bookmark they have to go to. Instead of, if I need to use this app versus that app, I got to bounce between windows. Now I can have an integrated experience in 2013, and apps are not something I go to. Apps are something I bring to me. So there's a lot of exciting stuff just in the on-prem world from a 2013 perspective. In Office 365, it's amazing. Just the concept of being able to now, instead of having to go somewhere for my apps, I can come here, I can pull down the apps I need, I can build out kind of a mashup of functionality. Soon as cloud-based services from 365 expand, right now we talk about the CSOM model, and we talk about OAuth against SharePoint, OAuth against Exchange, and those kinds of things. OAuth also can talk to other stuff, like Facebook, like Twitter, like OneDrive. So, and there'll be more services coming out, and just integrating all these services and making that usable, and some of the new things like the cloud app model, project types, and those kinds of stuff. The ability to build something and distribute it is going to get a major shot in the arm with the app model. There are some side effects to that, of course, that you have to be ready for. So SharePoint hosted apps is pure client side. You're going to want to plan for that. Provider hosted apps is a lot harder to set up, but you do have now the ability for server side code, that kind of stuff. But extremely exciting. And I think from a maintenance and operational planning standpoint, that's probably the most exciting piece for administrators, for people that are more on the operational side, especially for decision makers. A lot of the stuff you talk about, a lot of stuff I hear in the enterprise, is all the planned outages that have to happen because we've got to deploy this software, we've got to deploy that software. And that all changes. Very, very cool stuff.
So you heard the good. I like being on
Spoiler
a panel
alert.
And being able to be the devil's advocate and give a... That was such a glowing review. But I'd like to give you some reality check. And I'm happy to play that role in the community. Sometimes I get in trouble for that, but that's why you guys like me. Anyway, over the last couple years, it's been a challenge since SharePoint 2013 launched with the app model. Huge promise, poorly delivered. And what I want to give you is kind of a gut check. App model sounds great. It really is something that was really set up to succeed, but everything we need hasn't been there so far. And I know there's a bunch of new APIs, and I have hope for what's coming, that with Arpon's team and a lot of more emphasis on these new cloud APIs, that it is going to change where we've been. Because having looked at the App Store and having played with the apps that are out there, I actually can't recommend hardly any of what's out there. And I think it's really sad that having been nearly, what are we, nearly a year and a half into this thing, and there's not any, like, wow, any deployment you do of SharePoint, you have to have this app in it. It's a gut check. It's a reality check. At the same time, let me toe the company line a little bit and say, server solutions, you do need to start working your way out of doing more and more server code. You do need to start working more and more with the client API. You do need to start removing a lot of those dependencies and be smart about what you deploy. We do need to start getting a lot of those server-side dependencies and working more with HTML5, responsive web, and cloud APIs. The capabilities with what Azure's got in there, unfortunately, the app model hasn't been able to deliver everything we need so far, but hey, I've got faith that they are going to be able to deliver it. V1 isn't always Microsoft's best suit, and I think we've kind of seen that a little bit with that model. And thank you for not sleeping. And Eric will now give us a little bit of the we had the good, bad, or good to ugly. Maybe we can get something in between.
So my focus is mostly architecture, on-prem, and then fixing all the things that people mistakenly break or code breaks or whatever. So we're hearing a lot about this whole cloud API and how things are going cloud-based. We're hearing about what the lack of deficiencies are with, you know, V1. What doesn't really get talked about too much is how much, and it was touched on a little bit, but how much work it actually is to get your SharePoint hosted apps up and running in your on-prem environment. And you know, when RTM hits, or even pre, and so, you know, obviously, because I'm in the support role, we get to see a lot of the stuff way earlier. And I used to think that was like the coolest thing, and now it's not so cool because we used to have to deal with all the bugs and fix everything and whatever. But
thanks for giving us a reality check.
That's a reality check, man. It's not betas. So
I think that's the great thing about this panel is being able. We're going to give it to you straight. I don't think this is about marketing.
No.
When you talk about thought leadership, I think a lot of it is you got to have a strategy. You got to plan for it. And a lot of the times, the marketing material will sell the vision, but there's also execution, and some of this stuff hasn't been ready. So a lot of it is, hey, you got to test this stuff first.
Yeah,
I think go straight to production.
And I think it's gotten to the point now, through like the March PU, and we're coming up on Service Pack 1, and well, that's been released now. But can I say, is this being recorded?
That was a yes.
Is okay. We'll let that one go then. So yeah, Service
this
Pack
will be a
1.
Fun recording.
Okay. So always remember to patch and test before you patch your production environment. Anyway, so we're getting to the point now where a lot of this stuff is becoming a lot easier to roll out. And you know, if you are still on-prem and you're never going cloud-based, and we have a lot of those types of customers, and that's totally fine. Or you're going hybrid-based and you're using some of these apps both. Internally and externally, there's a lot that goes into it from an architecture perspective that you have to plan for, and not just clicking switches and making sure that you've clicked the right ones, but full-on hardware, you know, whether it's VMs or whether it's physical hardware, whatever, but you know, servers that need to be spun up and certs that need to be purchased, and that's a lot of overhead that you need to be considering before you even get to the point where, okay, well, I want to get off all my my OS published
solutions and my SharePoint directly install solutions to get to the point where you can even use apps. So there's a lot that you have to plan out. I mean, that's always been my shtick, is just plan as much as possible. It's always 3/4% planning and the 1/4 left of actual execution, because hopefully it didn't take that long to do it because you planned for so long. So just keep that in mind. It's not, once you get to the point where you're doing the development, you've already done all the work, but it takes a bit to get there.
Great. Any comments from the audience on that?
Don't be afraid. Grab a mic.
I think it depends on what your business needs are. There are different technical shortcomings. I mean, writing full trust code, you have full access to the API, which is quite a bit more mature than the CSOM or the REST APIs. But if delivery is more of an issue for you, so for instance, I see many, many times someone just takes InfoPath, creates a form, all of a sudden they get help desk calls because the form's not working, and that's an app, because it costs that company money to use that thing. So now someone else wants the same thing somewhere else, and it's almost like they have to start from scratch for whatever reason. So if you've got it in place with proper planning,
sure,
and functionally it does what you need it to do, it's within the realm of what it's capable of doing. From a delivery perspective, it's quite a bit easier to get it in the hands of users and start using.
Was your question more for the apps that are in the store today, or? Okay.
Is there anything specific that you would say from a technical limitation standpoint to stay away from these types of apps today with where we are right now with the app model?
Repeat the question first.
Yeah, let me repeat that question. So the question is, are there any apps that are in the App Store that we should be worried about or that we should stay away from? What I've found thus far with the apps that I've installed and played with, the restrictions are so high that most of those being a section of the auto-hosted, not so many auto-hosted, mostly provider-hosted. What's really tough with those is branding. You put your brand on stuff, you add an app, and now you're jumping over to AvePoint's service to see your meetings and so on. They try really hard to make it look so that, let's pull the CSS, let's try and make this look good. But that's one of the gotchas as an example. But I think that the restrictions are so much in terms of the hosted apps that's part of why it's so challenging, is trying to find that balance of what do we allow, what do we support. And so as the APIs get richer, you'll see better functionality. But so far, things are quite restricted. But what the redeeming quality, you could say, in apps is, there's so much work that's been done in PowerShell to be able to monitor what's happening and being able to identify those apps and those things that are going wrong, that's the redeeming grace on some of them.
I would say too, if you're talking from an on-prem standpoint and you're talking about SharePoint host apps, you have severe limitations on what it can do. If there's a certain thing you wish it could do, say there was a certain REST interface that allowed you to do X that you just can't do currently. And yes, maybe in a couple of years it will be available. In the meantime, just because you're on-prem and you're using that model doesn't mean you cannot use full trust code. It's just you probably want to use it in more limitations. So if you just use it in a more focused thing, hey, let's just provide a REST service that exposes this one piece of functionality, mostly because it's not there yet in the CSOM or the REST API, but it will be. So just do it initially, set it up, and then you can start using that in your SharePoint hosted apps. I mean, SharePoint hosted apps are technically just a subsite. It's a subsite underneath your site. And so without you really realizing, when you're installing all these apps, you're basically creating a bunch of subsites. And so all the content, you got a web part from an app, it's really an iframe to that subsite. So all that code, all that JavaScript is running in the context of SharePoint. It can call those REST APIs. And so then you can kind of augment where you need to. Now, ideally, of course, all that stuff gets exposed via the APIs, the CSOM APIs, and the REST APIs. Technically, with a little creativity, you could probably, in an on-prem situation, kind of augment and let you now take advantage of what those SharePoint apps do very, very well.
So I would actually add one more piece of this whole pie. We've talked about what's out there for free or what you can purchase from the hosted apps. We talked about the technical limitations. But what we don't often talk about is the cultural adoption of an organization, right? And that's where, I mean, I'm literally the guy in the room that hears all the deep sighs, right? I'm there when I tell people, yeah, that business critical app that you have running in 2010 won't run, or it will run, but eventually it's going to be phased out or deprecated, and you're either going to do all the work again, or you're going to squeeze what you have in that app that you, or that solution that you had prior that worked great for you, into a model that may not support everything that you want. So now you're right on the cusp of upgrade. You've got all these great plans to do all this great stuff, but how do you manage that situation? Do you say, okay, we'll just go ahead and deploy what we have in a deprecated state and just assume that when it comes time for us to be able to pull off completely out of that solution package, we'll go to a hosted app or, you know, whatever variation of that you can do. You know, how do we approach that, and how do we put some sort of constraints around that as it pertains to a business critical need? And that doesn't get talked about a lot, but that's what I find a lot of organizations find themselves in, that situation. It's like, all right, so do we go now? Do we go later? Do we deploy our solution in the 2010 or the 14 mode site? Or do we deploy it in a 15 mode site, and is it supported? Is it going to work? So there's a lot of questions you have to really figure out before you even get to the point where, oh, am I going to do an app, or I'm going to keep my old solution? So
that's a good point. We had a question over here.
Yeah, I have a statement actually and a question. So looking at, you know, I realize our group is small, but from hearing from you, I appreciate the point of view that you take is both honest and pragmatic and is realistic. I come at this mostly from a business process person, not so much a developer. I've been on the side of saying, okay, you know, I've listened, I've had to implement with marketing teams in previous lives, and I'm but leading into that, so I think it's a very responsible and pragmatic point of view you're providing today, and I honestly appreciate that. Looking at that as a kind of looking in the on-premise atmosphere and on cloud as well, too, as we transition to that 2010, 2013 model still in there, big point of view of what to look out for, or what are you seeing with your clients, you know, any key tips of how that transition with, you know, more farms or other things are going on?
Yeah, I think from my perspective, the question being around pragmatic tips and recommendations around real world, what are you seeing from your customers, what do you recommend to your customers around strategy, high level, not from a developer's perspective, but from the strategy perspective for marketing and so on.
Some things you have to talk at the developer level, say, okay, developers need to get it in here. Kind of
some best practices across the board. My perspective, I've always felt like there's vanilla and there's chocolate. This is my analogy of, I need a vanilla farm. The vanilla farm is the stuff that if I was the cloud, I would have my clean stuff. The stuff where I'm not putting any server code. It's, if I'm doing any code, it's client side. Then I'm looking at this other world. It's line of business integration. I can't find any other way of being able to do this kind of work. It's high value. It's very likely plumbed into portals or plumbed into dashboards, and there's very likely third-party integration with sets of web parts or sets of plumbing that's going to be an investment anyway. And what I get is this nice cut between the vanilla and the chocolate, where this vanilla stuff, great candidate for Officer 65 when we're ready for it, great candidate for OneDrive or team sites and more the ad hoc world. And then I've got that investment of, it may be many years before this stuff ends up in the cloud, if ever. But we have our arms around, this is where we're going to invest our dev and test and staging and production environments. And this is the area when I need to go sell it to the business. I've got my business scenario around this set of data, this set of site collections, and it's something that I can get my arms around. Where all that other data, and for the majority, I say this is 80, 90% of the ad hoc collaboration stuff that is in the vanilla area, the great candidates for Office 365. Depending on the size of the customer, those could be two different web apps. In larger customers, these could be two different farms. So maybe your services are across that. I'm not going to go into search architectures and things like that. But from that perspective of, is it memory isolation or however you do that, at least from a strategy perspective, when I'm doing migrations, I'm dividing them. I want to eliminate dependencies and focus on how do I, as I upgrade, remove server footprint, make it clean as possible, make sure I've got SLAs around anything that's written, anything that's a server code. And I'm finding more and more companies that are saying, we've dealt with server code solutions and stuff that's spaghetti code from development, even within the organization, that we are now going to say, no server code. In both of these scenarios, them saying, you know, maybe it's only third-party code that we're going to support over here because we know we can call somebody who's going to come fix this if we have a problem. And if we need to do upgrade, we've got somebody who's going to come in and help us fix this. So that's definitely some best practices around summarizing, having strategy around what is our going forward path and not putting everything all in one big bucket. That's the worst thing you can do, is having one massive bucket, spaghetti code, no SLAs, who owns what. You got to track ownership and SLAs, and it's, I often use the word governance, but some people say that's a bad word these days. You got to have a strategy around that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah?
Cool.
I don't want to get too far off the subject, but InfoPath, can you just speak a little more to that about why Microsoft is moving to it? Is it going to have Apollo? Or do you have a lot to say about it? More power to do with the thousands of forms?
Yeah. So the question, what's up with InfoPath?
InfoPath is dead, by the way.
Yeah. So I have an interesting perspective on this because I sort of got my start in SharePoint from InfoPath. So I've been just knee-deep in everything you could possibly imagine. And although I don't have the exact answer as to why, because I think we're all sort of like, all right, well, InfoPath was a pretty solid solution as long as it, you know, whatever you had to do fit within the constraints of what InfoPath could actually do. The weird thing about InfoPath, though, is you think it can do all these things, and then the moment you realize that it's that one thing it can't do, like the whole solution didn't work. So you have to sort of backtrack and go a different way. But for InfoPath, for me, I have no idea why. What I can speculate, who knows if this ends up being the case, is, you know, we're going to a more distributed app model across the board. Everything. I mean, and this makes sense. I mean, think about this from a vendor perspective, too. This is another way for vendors to be able to provide solid solutions to fill those gaps that Microsoft is just never going to build. It's a platform, right? We're never going to build 100% exactly what everyone wants SharePoint to be. It would take forever. It would cost a ton. And, you know, it's so much. There's so much complexity now. We could never do that. So I think it's A, to more easily fill the gaps that are in SharePoint, because there's plenty. And B, again, InfoPath only went so far. It did a lot of tie-in. You could do some code behind, but then that got tricky all in itself. And I just think ultimately it's getting to the point where the desire to have a solution-based app or something that we could drop in a SharePoint site and say, I want this, and click, 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 and it, have it build out that app or that form for you that did essentially what InfoPath did before without the learning curve, because there was a pretty steep learning curve after you got past that, what can InfoPath do and how do I manipulate those little things. I think that's the biggest driver. But also, there's a lot of room for improvement in InfoPath. Quite honestly, since 2003, there haven't been a ton of add-ons. I was in the TAP program before I even was thinking about working at Microsoft. How to improve InfoPath, and I submitted stuff every single time they asked us to submit stuff to add to it. It never got implemented. I mean, it was just normal stuff, like how do I hide a repeating table? You know, you had to hide a repeating table within a section just to get the stupid link to go away. I mean, that was such a pain in the butt. It's so easy to fix that, but it never got implemented. And I just think it was that one-off spun-up thing that ended up catching on and everyone used it and it worked. and now we just need something a little bit better. That was a really long answer. Sorry about that.
I heard some talk about just Microsoft consolidating their forms technology, and also the person I was talking to talked about the voices on and all the feedback mechanisms that Microsoft is opening up, because they want your feedback on the new
So let me speak a little bit too.
Yeah.
I was the guy who led the funeral. InfoPath is dead. And so I'm the first one who gets in line to say, you guys have been talking about InfoPath dying for 5 years. Whether, you know, may have started with rumors and reorgs within Microsoft where, you know, some of these things started to leak 5 years ago. So I think it's finally, we can say Microsoft acknowledges that InfoPath is dead, even though it started dying 5 years ago. That being said, we have 10 more years of end of life of InfoPath, and it being supported on 2013, many of the customers in this room not even yet being on 2013, it may be quite the long runway. In fact, I was talking with a customer who's like, we had to hurry and get our licenses in. They spent $1 million on InfoPath, the product that's dead. Pretty interesting strategy, but they have thousands of forms. And their strategy isn't to go to whatever SharePoint 2015 is going to be called anytime soon. So for them, it was still an intelligent choice. You have to look at what the options are. In conversations, even here at this event, people are like, the roadmap, access. Wow, I've got a really good education on access then, if that's the answer to InfoPath forms and that web form solution, and I think even from a developer perspective, not being a developer myself, there's a lot of answers now around how to build good web forms and building solutions around that with richer client-side code and some of those things with the object model. But I want to stop there. But essentially what I am saying is there's a runway. There's quite a long runway. Next version we're saying is 2015. Based on the keynote, and whatever access stuff they're talking about being available in Office 365 at some period in the future, great. I'm interested in understanding what that story is, but it's not here today. Let's make sure we have some really good positioning around how we deal with this, and let's make sure we are quite clear with the customers. And I'll tell you one thing I'm going to do personally is I'm going to dig in on what I think should be the strategy for my recommendations for my customers around when they're building forms. And without doing too much name dropping, am I going to use Bamboo Solutions around workflows and forms? Am I going to use alternates like K2 and Nintex? You know, other people that are in the exhibit hall that you can go check out all these solutions. Today, I'll be honest with you. I said I'd be honest here. Those solutions are much better than anything that you're going to get out of the box. And I did say that out loud.
I didn't hear. So that's not your company that spent $1 million on InfoPath?
No.
For the next... yeah?
The shift from, you know, server-side development to client-side development is a big shift, and we have a team of developers that are facing that. And we have a fairly mature process for large team developments around
small thing from a development standpoint. We've got a little head start on this, and we're hearing a lot about it here. Client-side development usually means JavaScript, but JavaScript in and of itself can be kind of one of your parts where things get a little chaotic. And TypeScript is one thing that I would recommend getting smart on and learning about, because it immediately strongly types your JavaScript, because it's going to be JavaScript when it runs client-side. At the same time, when you're developing in Visual Studio now, things like a bad name on a class definition or a property reference or something like that will actually give you a compiler error. So now you're going to start to catch that stuff well in advance. So from a coding standpoint, I would strongly recommend getting your hands wrapped around TypeScript and starting to kind of enforce. At the end of the day, the way TypeScript works is when you compile and you deploy, you're still deploying JavaScript. There are ways to get around it. There's actually an issue in Visual Studio. You can't actually step through SSL-based TypeScript yet, but you will be able to debug your code and actually step through your TypeScript very, very soon. It's pretty cool. And so you can actually almost exclusively deal in TypeScript as opposed to JavaScript when you're talking about your code, when you're planning for your code, and when you're developing your code. And I think it gets you closer to the more strongly typed things like C#.
So. Let me jump in. I used to run a team, collaboration team, and we got faced with that. We were part of the 2013 TAP program, and we were looking at how do we set up our development organization, both from server-side, client-side, how do we look at what we know now, how do we make sure we've got that dev, test, staging, production. There's that aspect of it. But ultimately, I would say that was more around making sure we've got good, solid processes in place. And yeah, there's tools to help that become smoother, but ultimately it's a lot about process and how you package things, whether you package stuff as an app or whether you package things as a solution. But the real nugget I want to give you on this is it's JavaScript libraries. There's tons of different libraries and classes that are out there that'll help you get a huge start. And so before you start trying to build stuff from scratch, there's so many things that are out there in the community, in the industry, that when you start looking at those, you'll find people like Mark.
Mark
Anderson, exactly. Mark Anderson around various different JavaScript libraries where you can get started, whether it's around mobile or whether it's around a lot of HTML5 design stuff, responsive web. There's a lot of really rich libraries and classes out there to begin with. And as a team, deciding what do we want to build our stuff on top of that'll essentially streamline that in a big, big way.
Taking that a step further, using things like NuGet as part of your Visual Studio projects, where if you've got, it's called NuGet, N-U-G-E-T, if you've got I'll use jQuery, really, really general. Everybody knows about jQuery, and that's really not, it's probably already there, but technically, if you had jQuery as part of your library, it will actually pull down the most recent release that you want to use as part of the build process. So when you start using a lot of those external things, it's really easy, to download a bunch of JS files, and all of a sudden you've got six copies of the same thing in different places, and your co-developer down the hall, they've got a completely different set. So using something like NuGet is one way to centrally manage that stuff because it's essentially like cloud-based libraries out of CodePlex is essentially what you're doing.
Let me give you one little nugget as well. I think that a lot of what you find is, I had a conversation with a server-side developer recently and it said, so in this new world of cloud and what you see in Azure and what all these new capabilities are with cloud APIs and stuff like that, what do you see your new role is? How do you see developing on SharePoint in the new world? And the last SharePoint conference, there wasn't a single session on building server code, even though in the keynote they said, hey, we've added new APIs. You can see where Microsoft's putting their emphasis. That being said, this developer said, I'm trying not to build server code. I'm now, by default, starting with client-side code, starting with other libraries and so on, with the idea that unless I can't, there's a line that I cross. And when that line gets crossed, it's something that raises all the way up to the architects and into the business that, hey, this is going to be something we're going to have to support and upgrade and understand that there's going to be a 3x cost for whatever it takes to produce it, to be able to support it throughout its life. So I think some of those things are important to understand.
Another thing I totally forgot, if you're talking about apps, we'll just use a simple one of SharePoint hosted apps. This actually runs across the board, more on the shape of SharePoint hosted and auto hosted, is if you build an app, you give it out to your users, let's say you have a corporate catalog, so you put it out to your users on-prem and they're installing your app. You have an upgrade to it. You go from version 1 to version 2. In one scenario, that version upgrade is actually an opt-in situation. So just putting it out there doesn't mean everybody's immediately using version 2. They actually have, they'll see in our AllSight content that it says, hey, you've got an upgrade available. But if they choose not to do it, they're still technically running version one. So from a planning perspective and from potentially a support perspective, you know, now you might want to put in your help desk. You get a ticket in, they say, well, what version are you using? We need to ask you, what version of the app are you using? Whereas before, it was centrally deployed and immediately pushed out. So another thing to think about there, depending on the kind of app that you're deploying.
Question on?
Yeah?
Questions on tenancy. Running a multi-tenant 2010 farm, and everything I hear here is on-premise or going to 365 in the cloud. Could you give me some idea of like a way forward for someone who is going to be an on-premise solution in 2013 and how to get from a 2010 multi-tenancy environment to a 2013 multi-tenancy environment?
That's totally right.
No. No, I'll let you take that one.
Serious?
Yeah.
All right. Multi-tenant in 2010, it was tough, and I empathize. There are ways to get between a multi-tenant and back into corporate hosted mode, you could say, by using migration tools or using the backup restore. Essentially, you can use your PowerShell commands to do the migrations, essentially. And you can do that through the, what you don't want to do is you don't want to grab that database and attach it. Essentially, you want to go version, stick within 2010 to 2010, get them back into corporate hosted mode site collection before you do your upgrade. That would be my recommendation, whether you use a third-party tool or whether you use PowerShell to do it.
Go back before you go forward.
Same, not necessarily back, but same to same, just switching the mode. Say you create a web app, for example, within the same farm.
Right.
Doesn't have to be a separate farm.
Just get them into non-tenancy web applications before they get to 2013.
Yeah, be careful around the GUIDs. You know, make sure you do some testing and so on. But it definitely can be scripted. And, but you gotta be careful around not messing with your config DB. I still think it's challenging. I don't think it's for the regular person. It's harder. It's harder. I think that's being honest, is it's harder. It's not that you can't do it. I think it's just harder.
You mentioned a lot of questions.
Any others? Go ahead.
So you mentioned about this InfoPath solution that you built before. How did you go about testing them? Any of you?
So
because it was like you said you built it, so it has to be either built on the production or?
In its simplest sense, I mean, if you had a dev farm or if your dev story is standalone VMs, where you're making the choice to say you use a standalone instance of SharePoint as opposed to a farm-based instance of SharePoint because you're just in the dev state, and there's a stage state where you're actually testing it in a more similar environment to production. As far as testing it goes, I mean, I would just build it and deploy it there, and then I'm kind of working in a vacuum, and I make sure it works just fine in that vacuum, and then I kind of work my way out. Alternatively, yeah, you could technically develop in production because one of the things to develop in production like that, while it's technically possible, you want to govern that. You want to make sure that you understand that you don't give somebody like a site collection administrator, A, you don't give site collection administrator rights to everybody, but B, you definitely don't give them to a developer that says, I need this developer to build this one form for this team, right? The finance team or something like that. That person should be given enough rights to be able to build the form and deploy it where it needs to go, but not everywhere, just to make sure they don't accidentally do it in a place that they shouldn't be doing it. Because it technically is the same set of steps. The deployment story, you got an InfoPath farm and you're deploying it to SharePoint. The only difference between production and dev is a URL. So it's no real difference from that standpoint. So you could totally do it directly into production as long as you plan for that. But that's really only the case when you're talking about something that's brand new. You know, quick turnaround, you're not doing a lot of planning. It's just I need a rapid form to capture information, maybe a little bit of workflow. But I don't want to necessarily have a major system across it. But once you have that in place and once it's being used, it's a different story. Now, you really shouldn't be just making changes directly into production if you need to. In general, you probably shouldn't be doing that if you can help it. But technically as possible.
So one of the words I haven't heard today yet is agile. And I think that agile is definitely something that we talk about in terms of governance, especially when we talk dev test staging production and all that kind of stuff. It's around, I have said the governance word. A lot of it is ends up being things around your policies. And as an example, if that came to me, hey, we're developing a form, and if it's not some simple info path publish, you know, we could do this in our sleep kind of form, that there was some code behind or there was some major component, that's definitely not happening in production if I'm managing the environment. What we would go with is we would help set you up with either, if it needed to be done on the same farm, we'd set you up with what we'd call, you know, a kind of a mirrored site collection within the same web app, so they can validate that it's got all the same rules. Like say an extranet, for example, somebody who's on the outside trying to build this thing, we just create an alternate site collection. They say, okay, we're ready to go. We do a backup and restore, so they've got a copy of that, you know, with various PowerShell scripts to deploy that to another location. But obviously, there's a lot of things to take into consideration there. But taking that agile approach of iterative, let's make sure the customers are happy. Your customers aren't able to see that dev environment. They're likely going to see it closer out to production, you know, depending on how you run your governance plan.
Yeah,
why are organizations currently invested, same thing with InfoPath, SharePoint Designer, last few months we did purchase K2 and SmartForm, so we're moving in that direction, but we obviously it's transition from one product to another. And if we were to go in 2013 and the stragglers of things that got left in InfoPath migration, should I be concerned about that, or is it a pretty simple process?
No, I wouldn't be concerned about it. I mean, it's going to live. Yeah, I mean, it's going to, it depends on, yeah, I mean, like we were saying before, it's, we're looking so far out right now. In fact, the official word, at least from the office blog that I saw, was keep working in InfoPath. We don't have a fully baked solution right now, and when we do, hopefully it'll rock, right? But until then, just keep working in InfoPath, and I think that's a legitimate argument. I mean, InfoPath, like we were saying, has been around so long, and there hasn't been too many changes to it, so what should we, I mean, nothing is going to change in the next.
What if there's jQuery code behind the forms and the workflows? Is that?
jQuery doesn't scare me as much as server code behind stuff, because it's a red flag when I'm doing a migration or upgrade. If there's server code behind, I better make sure I've got that code somewhere in source and know what's exactly going on. Not that it's going to be a real problem between 2010 and 2013. Not a major differences from that perspective of server.
Yeah.
Server to server, those things, if you've got what you had, definitely can be easily deployed again. It is one that, like I said, it's a red flag of, hey, this is something we got to pay attention to.
Okay.
But it's not the end of the world.
It would be completely different if you were looking at, like you were saying, server, because server behind code. Especially when you upgrade, depending on the mode in which you have your sites live in. So if this is new to anyone, in 2013, when you install on-prem, you basically get a 14 hive and a 15 hive, and it'll freak you out the first time if you didn't know it was coming, because if you thought you'd installed on a fresh server, and it ends up that basically 2013 you get both. But what that means is the difference between 2010, when we had the visual upgrade thing that sort of kind of virtually ran 2007, so it didn't work very well. We're actually using the core bits to run a SharePoint site in 2010 code. So if you had server behind code in your InfoPath forms, worst case scenario, you could keep your SharePoint sites in 2010 mode, and in theory, most of it should work just fine. The problem is, you know, you'll have a different customer experience from people who have access to 2013 sites that have been upgraded in 2010, and that becomes a cultural thing. But if it's just client-side jQuery stuff, I would be more concerned about how you're going to tap into that info or to the workflow side of it if you have an InfoPath form that traditionally had like a custom developed workflow, or you know, like a SharePoint designer style workflow, and you've taken that workflow and moved it up using Nintex now. So how are you going to make those connections? That's where I would focus my energy.
The workflow is where it should be concerned.
Yeah.
Not the form or the jQuery. Yeah.
Right.
Workflow itself. There's a lot more attention in the upgrade.
Okay. I've migrated 3 different versions of SharePoint and absolutely workflows will not be able to
workflow.
Can we build a workflow?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't come over, but otherwise that works pretty well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, anything with a workflow.
Well, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal until you have a 2,500 InfoPath forms that you have to update. That's a big deal.
I have a whole engineering department that's completely up in arms because.
Yeah. I wouldn't be worried about it anytime soon. I know we had a question over here somewhere, right? Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. We're talking about 2015. Most of the folks I've talked to here this week, they're not even on 2013.
Right.
Are y'all going to ease or make it easier to do this upgrade? I work for a few old companies, and it's a massive multi-million-dollar, multi-month kind of process. And I've been part of it since 2003, 2007, 2017, nothing. And I'm hoping I can retire before.
I am not at the pay grade to answer that question. I hate to say that, but I don't even have the slightest insight into that. I mean, from my perspective. No, go ahead, buddy. All you.
I'll jump in this one.
Okay.
Put in my mouth.
All right.
What the challenge you're going to see is Microsoft is code first. Cloud first. Okay. With cloud first, that means they're designing these products and features around scale. Not everything that goes to Office 365 is going to make it to the on-premises version of SharePoint. But that's important to understand. But at the same time, as they build and design features, they're cloud first. So that being said, they are looking to remove more and more of that server footprint, richer APIs. So depending on what your policies are around server code, the more you can remove that footprint, the easier upgrade will be. That's definitely the case. And so a lot of it has to do with what's going to be deprecated. How do we support the new stuff? And they haven't even started to talk about what upgrade looks like. But I would, my gut check would be, how's it going to get easier? I would say upgrade gets easier when you have less server code and more client.
I think upgrades are those things that you have to do. Things change, and you got to learn the new stuff and. Sometimes you gotta look at upgrade as an opportunity to pull out that old stuff that doesn't work very well. And
we did that much we're not gonna have time to upgrade. We won't be finished. We have a 7-8 month process. We're a global company, and we're not as big as a lot of people. We're a very small team. It's just a major effort. And, once I get back to work every 6 months, it's gonna be different.
Yeah.
They have changed that. Before they were saying it was going to be much more frequent. Now it seemed like there was actually a positioning change in that keynote where they were saying you're not going to get new versions of SharePoint every year. They did kind of change that position.
Yeah, they said mid-2015, right, for the next one.
2015 is when they
for on-prem.
So, again, I'm you. I do all the stuff that you're worried about, and I'm helping folks like you deal with that. So my take on it is, the upgrade that you did from 2007 to 2010 is nowhere near going to be as difficult going from 2010 to 2013. I know there's an astronomical amount of stuff that you specifically in your org have to worry about, and that's all good, but the stuff that you had to do that was so freaking complicated in 2007 and getting off of that platform in 2010, that code base has not changed from 2010 to 2013. So a lot of that stuff, hopefully, will come across, you know, just in a database attach. And I've seen this. I've done probably almost 24 upgrades from 2010 to 2013 now, since RTM, basically, and some of the TAP before that. And it's not code. It's not doing the database attach stuff. It ends up being silly things like branding and what we were talking about, workflow. I mean, those are the ones that end up being the most challenging. So my perception, and it, I can't imagine with the amount of emphasis on cloud stuff right now that this is going to change for on-prem. So this is just a stab in the dark, but I'm willing to bet some money on it. That code base from 2013 to whatever wave 16 is going to be is also not going to be as challenging. So when it comes time for you to get to the point where, and you're probably, 2 years off each release version before you even get to the point where you're thinking about it, right? So you're looking already at 2018 before you're even thinking about 2000 or wave 16. I don't think it's going to be that much challenge. In fact, I think you're going to come up with a situation where, okay, what can we offload to some of the new feature base that we have in either hybrid cloud solution or full-on cloud solution that used to cause you to stay up at night doing version-to-version on-prem. So I think that's what's going to end up being where you're going to focus a lot of your time when it comes to that point. But the good news, short version, Joel answer to that long spiel was basically it's not going to be as difficult, hopefully, going forward from where you are right now to the next version and then after that to wave 16.
Hard work's behind
you. If not, you can call me and we'll figure it out.
Yeah. We'll replay in a couple of years.
One question. I've heard a lot of talk about the search capability, the significant difference between 2010 and 2013.
Oh, yeah.
So could you briefly discuss that? Again, I'm from an organization that's just starting in SharePoint under 2010. I really don't want to go through the pain. just migrate right now to 2013. That sounds like an advantage.
So let me give you a hit list. This is what I'd be focused on. A, takes up a lot more resources. B, so you're going to have to plan for that. A lot more servers probably and resource-intensive stuff. B, everything has to be recrawled, period, exclamation point. Doesn't matter if you're upgrading search administration database or not, because that's the only thing, by the way, you can upgrade is just the admin database of search, which essentially means forget it, just a stand-up search from scratch and redo it. So everything has to be recrawled. So when you're going from a 2010 to a 2013 environment, in your planning as you're doing all this stuff, and you're doing those test upgrades, and you're pulling over databases, you're seeing how stuff works, you should have already set up just in the order in which you have to address the things that are in place before you do a database attach. So all your configuration stuff, anything setting-wise that will throw an error saying something doesn't exist. Sorry?
I have nothing right
now. No, I understand. I'm saying this is the order in which you have to focus on. When you get to that point, however, and this is the key takeaway, while you're doing those test upgrades, and they're going to be blown away, you're going to redo them, you're going to pull the deltas, whatever, continue to have that indexer going, because that content doesn't necessarily change even though you blow that database away. You still have your index, and you've done all the configuration stuff to put that in place to make sure that your content can all sync up. So even though you have to recrawl everything, which could take X period of time, it is faster now with fast search built into our enterprise search, you can almost instantaneously, as you turn on the green light for your users to use your 2013 site, have everyone already up in the new search with being able to find stuff in there. So, I mean, these guys can expand more on that, and there's a whole lot more to search than probably what we have in the next whatever minutes to wrap this thing up. But if you want to hit up me after, I have nothing but search for the past couple months.
Two cents on
sounded to me like you were asking, what's really changed in search, or what's the big sale on? You hear it is the center of the universe in 2013. Search is the nucleus of how we drive content in 2013. And some people have not architected their environments that way, but it really, those who really are trying to take advantage of what 2013 has been built for are building it based on search as the center of the universe and building display templates and using the search controls and the search web parts for being able to really do really powerful stuff with cross-site publishing and the catalogs and display templates. There's so many new features that are based on what you can do with search that really changes the world up in the new SharePoint world. And with the usage analytics database getting pushed into search, analytics suck in 2013. Make sure you plan for that.
In SharePoint.
But essentially, with analytics now in search, that means you can now leverage popularity. You can leverage what's new. So it's really around building new experiences, leveraging and based on what's happening with the search technology.
So do you have 2010 now, or you're thinking? You're thinking to maybe start on 2013. Yeah.
2013 yeah. So much better.
You'll avoid that upgrade.
So I have a next question to ask. So with all the search features, we're in 2010, we're migrating. What's the big lift to really get it beyond the recrawl, really to use these cross-site and these elements? What's the big lift on the client side that has to happen?
It's planning. It's not going to automatically do those things. Okay. Essentially, you've got to configure those web parts. So essentially, you're looking at what do I want my new interface to look like for this portal or this intranet. For the team site, I want a what's new web part on there to keep people engaged. I want an activity feed of what's changed or what's new or social feeds and different things like that.
Including in the search piece, I guess, really on the search.
And really, it is what we're talking about is the new search web parts and display templates for being able to have really compelling HTML5 experiences, or even building a responsive web into your UI, and then being able to expose up how do we display content in using display templates with the new JavaScript.
Well, I think that's what you're getting at without really saying it is search becomes a data source from a CMS perspective now.
Yeah.
So you know you hear about SharePoint as a used as a CMS tool. Now those lines get blurred, and basically search is your data source, and using those web parts, you're now delivering that content, but it's actually crawled content. So now, just from a speed standpoint, retrieving from that index to data source, it's the same content as if you're just doing simple CAML queries against a library, but it's significantly reduced overhead from a server perspective, so you're gonna get a much better user experience. And then there's just all the new stuff and ways to deliver it, which is what's really, really exciting.
What's not going to happen is when you upgrade, it's not going to automatically start using all those cool search web parts. Right. That's really the planning perspective of, do I want to use search for navigation? Do I want to use cross-site publishing? Do I have data that should be in a catalog that I can then use to publish?
Is there additional tagging, I mean, that we need to be looking into as well to really get that to drive what's new?
I mean, you've got some of those enterprise content hubs and things like that in 2010, and the more you do smart things with your managed metadata service. You can leverage those, obviously, in search. But it is the properties in 2013 end up being really, really important and key around your ability to leverage those properties for being able to build your display templates.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the things that I know existed in 2010, you could customize the look and feel of your search results via XSLT customizations through that Corzals web part. A lot of that's converted to jQuery. Like JS render templates. So if you are heavily invested in custom XSLT, I don't know if it's backward compatible, but you may be talking about reverting or converting to JS render templates.
There's a lot of good community resources and blogs on these topics. You're not going to find as much in TechNet, is what I'm kind of saying. Is the community has done a lot of work around this stuff. There's some examples in MSDN, but make sure that you are tapping. Definitely, there's people in the community that that follow different libraries around JavaScript, and especially searching around display templates and catalog and cross-site publishing. Understand those features before you start doing your planning.
Like I mentioned earlier, from a development standpoint for TypeScript, JS Render is another one. Understanding JavaScript-based templating is very, very important.
Unless you buy a third-party product that'll, funnel that content through the 2010 APIs to upgrade it for you, essentially you always have to go through 2010 one way or the other.
If you're only using Microsoft, then
yeah. If you're just doing database attach, you have to attach it to a 2010 environment, do the upgrade, and then move it up to 2013. Yeah.
Even if there's not a lot
of schema changes, yeah, it won't even let you do it. Yeah.
Fast as in every SKU of SharePoint 2013. And the UI, and basically a lot of what was in the guts of Fast is now exposed in UI. If you were to backport a lot of what was in UI in 2013, you could do it in 2010 with Fast, but you had to dig into those properties.
I actually don't know much about the product to be able to give you a good synopsis of it.
Stop at the BA Insight group. I'd say there's some really good search experts downstairs. Or other search sessions.
There are other products than SharePoint?
A few.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I was teasing. I'm not sure.
All right, well, I think we've reached the end of our time here. I want to thank you guys very much for being on our panel today. If you're interested in more sessions like this and talking to the leaders in the community, I want to, again, remind you about that SharePoint Leadership Forum. And hopefully, if you're in the Chicago area, maybe you'll come visit with us in the fall. Chicago, D.C., and London this year. And it's free, yes. And we serve food and drink, too. Drink. D.C., it's in the fall.
So
Lindsay? October. So thanks very much. Have a great afternoon.